an Osho took. Walk without feet, fly without wings, and think without mind. Number 6.
The first question. You say we cannot take full responsibility for ourselves until we are awakened. The Western growth movement says we cannot be awakened until we take full responsibility for ourselves. Is there a conflict? Please comment. There is no conflict at all. It is just seeing the same phenomenon from two different angles. There are two aspects of the same event. They are together. They are simultaneous. There is no contrariness in them. They are complementary. When I say you can take full responsibility for yourself only when you are awakened, I mean that you don't know even who you are. How can you take responsibility for something you are not even aware? You are acquainted only with the tip of the iceberg. How can you take responsibility for the unconscious, which is 9 times more than the conscious? The conscious at the most can take responsibility for the conscious. Even that is difficult, because it is constantly influenced by the unconscious. You are pulled, dragged into things by the unconscious, you don't know why. You fall in love with a man or a woman. How can you take responsibility for it? Because falling in love is not a conscious decision on your part. It is an unconscious phenomenon. It simply overwhelms you. Suddenly, one day you find that you are in love. You have not done anything for it. You have not prepared for it. You were not planning for it. It comes out of nowhere, out of the blue, and you are possessed by it. You are madly possessed by it. How can you take responsibility for your love? Love comes from roots about which you are not aware. That's why I say, unless you are awakened, you will not be able to take total responsibility. Your responsibility will be fragmentary, superficial, shallow. And the growth movement people are also true. They say we cannot be awakened until we take full responsibility for ourselves. Yes, how you will be awakened? You have to start taking responsibility. It cannot be total right now. Let it be partial. It cannot be absolute right now. Let it not be absolute. It can only be fragmentary. It cannot be total. No need to worry. Even a fragmentary responsibility is far better than irresponsibility. Even to be aware about a small part of your being is far better than not to be aware. The choice is not between total awareness and partial awareness. The choice before you is between partial awareness and no awareness. Choose partial awareness. That's what growth people say. They are true. And when you choose to be responsible for a few things, you will become a little more alert. When you become a little more alert, you will be able to become a little more responsible. And so on and so forth. The more responsible you become, the more alert. The more alert you become, the more responsible. They will go hand in hand. Growth movement is a gradual process of enlightenment. What I am saying is not a process, but a metanoia, a metamorphosis, a transformation, a sudden transformation. If you understand me, in a single moment, like lightning, you can become enlightened. But if you don't understand me, then you will have to crawl slowly through group methods, meditations, prayers, yoga, tantra, Tao. You will have to move slowly, slowly. Either you become enlightened instantly, this moment, or you have to slowly, slowly grow into it. Growth movement is a movement for growth. Growth can only be gradual. What I am teaching to you is sudden enlightenment. It needs no time. Not even a single moment is needed. Listen to me. And in this very moment, because what I am saying or what I am trying to say is that you are already enlightened. You need not be enlightened. You have simply forgotten. It is a kind of forgetfulness. Not that you have to become. You are that. Just a recognition. Just a turning in. Just a deep look inside yourself. And you will start laughing. You have always been there. You had never left in the first place. Enlightenment is your nature. But there are two types of people. And you cannot do anything about your type. Either, like a Huineng, listening to the four lines of Diamond Sutra, you become enlightened. Now you cannot ask how to become Huineng. That is not possible. Either you are or you are not. There is no more to it. Hearing about Huineng down the centuries, many people have been cramming Diamond Sutra. Particularly those four lines. Day in, day out, people have been repeating them. If Huineng can become enlightened just by listening four lines of Diamond Sutra, then why cannot I? But you go on repeating. The more you repeat, the more unenlightened you will be. It can't happen that way. You are not a Huineng. Things are finished there. With sudden enlightenment, that is the problem. Either it happens or it doesn't happen. You cannot do anything about it. It is beyond you. The bhaktas have called it the grace of God. As if it comes from Him. It is a gift. You need not be worthy of it. Only one person in thousands or even in millions is capable of that. All the remaining ones have to move slowly, have to move gradually. That's why here I go on talking about instant enlightenment, and I go on sending you into groups, meditations, processes. Sometimes people come to me and ask, if enlightenment is possible right now, then why do you send us? Why you make us suffer? In the primal, in the encounter, in the gestalt. Why do you send us to these Rolfers who are very skillful torturers? What can I do? If you cannot listen to me, you will have to go to the Rolfers. Either you become awakened right now, it is your choice, or go, then I will send you to the groups. They will torture you, goad you, provoke you, pull you this way, that. They will create such misery for you that you will decide finally it is better to become enlightened rather than suffer so much. And unless you say to me that now I am enlightened, I will go on sending you. They help. You have to follow the long, the hard way if you cannot understand the shortcut. If you cannot take the jump, then you will have to get down by the ladder, rung by rung. Finally, you reach to the same place. One who has jumped into the valley and one who has been coming down by a ladder. Finally, they reach to the same point. And remember, even descending by a ladder, when you come to the last rung, you jump. What you will do when you have come to the last rung? Your jump will be small. The other person's jump has been big. He jumped from the top of the hill. You jump only from the last rung. But the last moment is always of jump. It cannot be otherwise. Whether you follow the gradual path or the sudden. Sudden is, of course, a pathless path. A gateless gate. Whatsoever you follow. Finally, at the last moment, the quantum leap has to happen. It depends how much courage you have. If you have real courage to risk all, to stake all, to surrender all, it will happen this moment. If you are miserly, businesslike, clever, cunning, conditional, then it will happen slowly, slowly. For the majority, growth groups are of immense importance. They prepare you. They help you to come to the point from where, even if you are not very courageous, you can take the jump. But the jump has to happen because you have to become discontinuous with yourself. Don't see any conflict between these two. It has been thought always that there is a conflict between the sudden and the gradual. This may be the first place in the world where the sudden and the gradual are meeting. Otherwise, those who have been teaching sudden enlightenment, Huineng. Of course, Huineng became suddenly enlightened. How can he teach you gradual enlightenment? And his followers, although they are not enlightened, but they go on talking about sudden enlightenment. And they are against the gradual, antagonistic to the idea of gradual growth. And the people, for example, Patanjali, who has grown from a seed to a big tree, not like a jump, who has grown like a small child growing towards youth, step by step, he charts the whole map from the body to the mind, from the mind to the soul, from the soul to the infinite. He charts the whole process. He is gradual. Now he will be against Huineng. Because when Patanjali talks about 8 limbs of yoga, Huineng talks only about the 8th samadhi. The 7 are dropped. The 7 are not included at all. For Huineng, those 7 are a kind of postponement. Why waste time with yogasanas, yoga postures? What are you doing? Enlightenment has nothing to do with the body. In what posture you are, enlightenment has nothing to do with that. You can be standing on your head, you can be sitting Buddha-like, you can be lying down. It can happen. It can happen in any posture because it is not a physical phenomenon at all. No yoga posture has any relevance, certainly not for Huineng, because he was passing from the market. Somebody else was reading the Diamond Sutra. He simply heard it. And hearing it, it happened. There is no question of any yoga posture. There is no question of a certain diet. There is no question of any practice of breathing. All the 7 limbs are dropped. Only the 8th samadhi, ecstasy. He became immediately ecstatic. It has happened to him. So he is right. He says, it has happened to me, it can happen to you. It can happen to everybody. Why waste your time practicing unnecessary things? All else is arbitrary. Essential is samadhi. Now, Patanjali knows differently. Samadhi has not happened immediately to him. He has been growing towards it, slowly, slowly. It has been a growth, not only of one life, but many lives. It has been gradual. It has been slow. It has been like a seed beginning a tree. And he will say, don't listen to such people, these people are mad. Things don't happen like that. No seed has ever been known to become suddenly a great cedar of Lebanon. No seed has ever been known. This Huineng has gone mad. Or Patanjali will find some way to explain. He will say Huineng must have been doing all other things in his past lives. He was ready. The 7 limbs he has fulfilled in his past lives. That's why suddenly the 8th has happened. But the 8th cannot happen unless those 7 has been fulfilled. So Huineng looks sudden but is not sudden. And ask Huineng, what about Patanjali? And he will say he is befooling himself. The thing could have happened directly. He was unnecessarily going round and round. He could have jumped. And the difference, Huining will say, man is not a seed. Man is already a cedar of Lebanon. Just forgotten. If man is a seed, then time is a must to become a tree. But Huining's whole point is, man is already the tree. Just fallen asleep. In his sleep, dreaming that I am a seed. He has to be simply shocked and awakened. Just the dream has to be broken. Once the tree opens its eyes, it will know that there is no need for any growth. For Patanjali, becoming is the most valuable word. For Huining, being is the most valuable word. To me, both are true. I am a bridge between Patanjali and Huining. And I understand, Huining is ultimately true, but ultimately true. And very rarely you will be able to find a person who becomes enlightened by hearing four lines. It is not easy to find a person. But it is possible. I don't say it is impossible. For the 99%, Patanjali will be the way. So I don't discard Patanjali. I don't discard anything. Everything is accepted and used. Use all the methods skillfully. And you will be benefited by all. And don't become obsessed with a method. Don't say that I believe in gradual growth. If you say I believe in gradual growth, then you are preventing the possibility of sudden enlightenment. Maybe you are the person, who knows? You are Huining. Even Huining was not aware unless he became enlightened. Who knows? Somebody may be here who is a Huining, a potential Huining. And if he starts thinking that, no, it is not possible, I don't believe in sudden enlightenment, that very idea will prevent him. Then he will listen the four lines of Diamond Sutra and will not become enlightened because of his idea. I would like you to remain open. But I am not saying that everybody is going to become enlightened just by listening those four lines of Diamond Sutra. Because then there is again a danger. Listening those four lines, you may start believing you have become enlightened. That will be a pretension. That will be delirium. That will be madness. Both dangers are there. I make you aware of all the dangers, all the possibilities. I make you available all the paths. Don't believe in any path. Don't discard any path offhand, a priori. No. Keep open. And use whatsoever feels right in this moment. And everything will help. And everything will support. And everything will strengthen. And everything will open you up. All things can be used. And you can be benefited by all the paths. The second question, I am frustrated. You say, be here now, drop the mind, be spontaneous. To me, this would be an enlightened state. I don't experience being enlightened. So what does this asshole do in the meantime? Meantime, enjoy being unenlightened. Because who knows? Tomorrow, you may become enlightened. I make you beware. Meanwhile, enjoy being unenlightened. Because once enlightened, you are enlightened forever. Watch out. Then don't come to me and say that now I have become enlightened and I want to enjoy things which only can be enjoyed in a state of unenlightenment. Then I will not be of much help. I can help you from unenlightenment towards enlightenment. I cannot help you from enlightenment towards unenlightenment. That is not possible. That has never happened. That is not possible. Once you know, you know. Then 1001 things will become immediately impossible. So don't waste time. Enjoy. You ask me, I'm frustrated. Because you are carrying an idea of becoming enlightened. And you are unenlightened. And the idea of becoming enlightened continuously hammering. And you continuously you know you are unenlightened. So frustration. You misunderstand me. You continuously misunderstand me. I am not giving you a goal. Enlightenment is not a goal. Naturally, you would ask then how it comes. If you can start enjoying your unenlightened state, it will come on its own. Enjoyment bridges both. That's why my emphasis on joy, celebration, happiness. Because happiness bridges both. The unenlightened person can also be happy. And the enlightened person is necessarily happy. That is the only quality that they share. That is the only quality that overlaps. I have not come across any other quality that overlaps. Hence I say, the quality that overlaps can be used as a bridge. The unenlightened person can be joyous only momentarily. Obviously. Because his mind is wavering. He is continuously dragged to the past, to the future, here and there, and he cannot remain here. But for moments he can. Just coming from the past and going to the future, he can be for a moment in the present. Coming from the future, going to the past, he can have a halt. And just a little holiday for the present. He passes many times in the day. Again and again. He settles back and forth. Settling back and forth, he crosses the present many times. In those fragmentary spaces, he can be happy. His happiness cannot be eternal. But happiness is happiness, eternal or momentary. When you are dancing and celebrating, your dance and celebration has the same quality as when Kabir is dancing or Meera is dancing. The same quality. The difference is of quantity, not of quality. It is only momentary. It comes and it goes. It does not stay. It is like a flash. By the time you become aware of it, it is gone. But it is the same thing. It becomes a sun to a Kabir, to a Meera. It becomes a constant source of light. But lightning in the clouds has the same quality. It is not different. It is the same light. Although you cannot read a book. And you cannot write a letter. By the time you will take the pen in the hand, the lightning is gone and it is deep darkness. But still remember, the quality of fire, the quality of electricity is the same. Whether it is a constant source like sun, or a very momentary flash of a lightning, the difference is only of time. Happiness overlaps. When Buddha is, he is happy. He is simply happy. It remains. It is like breathing. It is a climate around him. It never leaves him. To you, it comes like a fragrance. For a moment, your nostrils are full of it, and the next moment it is gone, and you are full of the stink of the world. But it is the same fragrance. In Buddha's life, the flower has bloomed. In your life, the flower has not bloomed. It comes and goes. You are feeling frustrated because of this idea of enlightenment is becoming a heavy phenomenon for you. You are making a goal out of it. And you will create misery. And a miserable person can never become enlightened. Drop misery. And you will ask how to drop misery. Drop goals. Goals create misery. When you are hankering for something and you cannot get, you become miserable. When you don't hanker for anything, but start moving in a new dimension, whatsoever you have, you start enjoying it. You may be sitting in the small garden of your cottage and thinking of the great palace, how to get it. In that very idea of the great palace, which you can see far away in the sunlight, the marble palace, you are becoming miserable. The more you become focused on that palace, you forget the beauties of this small cottage. The flowers are there. The lawn is green. The trees are happy. The wind is blowing. The sun is sovereign. The birds are singing. The birds don't make much difference between a palace and a hut. And the flowers bloom the same. And the sun showers the same. On the just, on the unjust, on the poor, on the rich. On the beautiful, on the ugly. On the successful, on the failures. You are missing. Forget the palace. In forgetting the palace, you will not be miserable. Start moving with this bird that is blessing you, sitting on your small tree, singing a song. Listen to it. And these rays of the sun that are falling on you. Rejoice. Sing a song. Dance with the trees. Lie down on the grass. Feel the wetness of it and the aliveness of it. That's what I mean. Meanwhile, enjoy your unenlightenment. And if you can enjoy your enlightenment, you will be surprised that the hut has become a palace. You will be surprised by the transformation that happens around you because it has happened inside you. When you change, the whole world changes. If you can enjoy your unenlightened state, enlightenment is going to happen to you. It cannot happen by desiring, it happens only by rejoicing. Jesus says again and again, rejoice, rejoice. Why? There is a key, a golden key. If you can rejoice, you will become capable of more rejoicings. If you can rejoice, your heart will dance, throb, will be able to open more. And more will be coming. You always get that for which you are ready. More you cannot get. You say, I am frustrated. You say, be here now. Drop the mind. Be spontaneous. You go on misunderstanding me. When I say to you, be spontaneous, you make a goal out of it. And that's what I am saying, don't do, please. Be spontaneous means don't have any goals. You make a goal out of being spontaneous. You start trying how to be spontaneous. The moment you bring how, you can never be spontaneous because there is no how to it. How always leads into the future. How always prepares plans. How can you plan to be spontaneous? Spontaneity is the understanding that I have not to run after the desires. Seeing the futility of desires, one no more runs after them, and there is spontaneity. When I say drop the mind, you start trying to drop the mind. Who is trying? The mind starts trying to drop the mind itself. Now this is impossible. The mind cannot drop the mind. You have to understand these things. What I am teaching you here is not something that has to be done. It is something that has to be understood. And you are too much interested in doing. You are in such a hurry to do something that you don't listen what I am saying. You don't get the point. And immediately you start planning how to drop the mind. Now who is this planning? Who is this thinking how to drop the mind? It is the mind itself. Now a new desire has arisen in you of dropping the mind. Now a new marble palace. Now a new goal. Mind is desiring. Mind is goal orientation. To drop the mind means see the point that mind leads you astray. It never allows you to be here now. Seeing that, be finished with goals. Seeing that, don't create new goals of dropping the mind and being spontaneous and being here now. Seeing the point, have a good laughter, relax, rejoice. And you are here now. And in the here now, there is no mind. And when there is no mind, there is spontaneity. Meanwhile, enjoy. I don't experience being enlightened. You will never experience being enlightened. How can you experience being enlightened? You are the barrier. And enlightenment is not an experience because there is no experiencer in it. Enlightenment is experiencing, not experience. In experience, there is division. The experiencer, the experienced. Between the two exists experience. When the experiencer and the experienced are no more separate, they have melted into each other. When the observer has become the observed, when the knower and the known are no more separate, then there is a totally new phenomenon for which I would like to use the word experiencing. I would like to use a verb, experiencing. Experience is a noun, closed, finished. Experiencing is ongoing. It is river-like. Those two, the duality of the knower and the known, has dissolved into the river. There is nobody who knows enlightenment. And there is not anything like enlightenment which can be known like an object.
you forget about these complex things. You simply start enjoying. That simple thing can be done easily. You can dance, you can sing, you can love, you can eat, you can go for a walk, you can have a good sleep. All these activities are beautiful if you can be totally in them, dissolved. Mind will go on trying its ways on you, its tricks on you. And you will be led astray by the mind many times. Whenever you remember, again have a good laugh, rejoice. Don't start fighting with the mind. Neglect, ignore. This is just an old habit. Watch. Don't pay much attention. By not giving attention, slowly, slowly you will starve the mind. It will start shrinking. One day it will not be there. When the mind is gone, you are gone. When you are gone, there is enlightenment. You say, I don't experience being enlightened, so what does this asshole do in the meantime? You are enlightenment. Simply, you have forgotten it. A remembrance will come to you, not by your efforts, but by being in tune with existence. An old boxer phoned his manager. Harry, he said, you gotta get me another fight. I wanna fight Slasher Delaney. No boy, replied Harry. You are over the hill. No more fights. How many times do I have to tell you? But please, Harry, just this one. I know I can beat him. Please, Harry, one more fight. No, you are past it. Quit while you are still on your feet. You can't fight again. But Harry, pleaded the old fighter, why can't I fight Slasher Delaney? Why can't you fight Slasher Delaney? Tell the manager, because you stupid shit, you are Slasher Delaney. Third question. Although I have been standing on my head for lifetimes, I cannot walk without feet. Why? You can go on standing on your head for many more lifetimes. That has nothing to do. To walk without feet, you need not stand on your head. That has no relevance. It has no relationship. To walk without feet and to fly without wings, you need not do any unnecessary things standing on your head. Standing on your head, you will not be able even to walk with your feet. What to say about walking without feet? Standing on your head, you will not be able to walk at all. Standing on your head, you will be dead, you will not be alive. When I say walk without feet, what I am saying? I am saying first, learn how to walk with feet. And then be very, very watchful inside. Be alert. Create a luminous consciousness. See who is walking when you are walking. Are you really walking? You have come from England to India, or from Japan to India. Has anything really moved inside you? You have not walked. The body has been carried from Japan to India, but your consciousness is the same. You were a child, now you are a young man or an old man. You have walked a long way. But have you really changed? Deep at the very core of your being, you have not walked at all. There has been no journey. You are exactly the same at the very core of your being. Walking, if you watch, you will know there is no walking. Talking, if you watch, you will see there is no talking. Thinking, if you watch, you will see there is no thinking. The deepest core of your being remains untouched, untouchable. It is a lotus in the water. Remains in the water but untouched. Knowing that witness is what I mean. Think without mind. Fly without wings. Walk without feet. I am not teaching you some circus tricks here that you can fly. So it's turn on your head. A circus manager was interviewing people for jobs in his circus. By the end of the day, he had hired very few and turned down many. While getting very bored with all their tricks, as he was ready to leave his office, a man walked in and said, "I would like to get a job in your circus." Without giving him a glance, the manager asked, "And what can you do?" "I can fly like a bird," said the man. "Sorry, we have no need for that, and all jobs are taken," said the manager. "Ah, well," said the man, disappointed, and flew out of the window. But I am not teaching those tricks here. You have to drop all tricks. These are all tricks. People become very much interested because ego feels very much fulfilled. If you can do something which nobody else can do, if you can walk without feet, if you can fly without wings, you will feel greatly happy. Although you have not achieved anything, stupid birds are flying. So what you have achieved? There is no achievement in it. It happened, a man came to Ramakrishna. And he was very haughty and very arrogant, and he said, "Do you know, I can walk on the river." They were sitting on the bank of the Ganges in Dakshineshwar. Ramakrishna laughed. He was a very, very innocent man. He said, "You can walk on the river?" And the man said, "Yes." And Ramakrishna said, "How many years it took you to learn the trick?" He said, 18 years. Ramakrishna said, "You fool. 18 years? When I want to go to the other side, just 2 paisa. Something worth 2 paisa. 18 years? I have never come across such a fool," he said. "You have wasted your life. I just go by the ferry boat. There is no need." But these things attract. The mind becomes very much interested. If something miraculous can happen to you. And miracles are happening continuously, but you don't see them. That you are breathing, that you are alive, that you are loving, that you are seeing the sun rays, the sky, that the world is such a benediction. Miracles are happening every moment. But you would like to fly like a stupid bird. And then you will feel very good that you have become a great yogi or something. Remember, be ordinary. Don't try to be special in any way. Otherwise, you will be moving in a wrong direction. To be special means to be egoistic. And ego is the only problem. There is no other problem. Forget about being special. Just be ordinary. And there is great joy in being ordinary. Just be human. And by being ordinary, you will come to know. You will know the art of walking without feet and flying without wings. That art simply means that I am not the doer. I have relaxed. Now God walks in me. God talks in me. God loves through me. That I am a hollow bamboo. That I have no special goal in life. His goal is my goal. And if he has no goals, I am perfectly happy with no goal. I am flowing with the river. Wherever it leads, that is my home. If it leads anywhere, if it doesn't lead anywhere, then that is my home. This is relaxation. And to relax in reality is to attain, is to be enlightened. Enlightenment is a utter let go. The fourth question, if people have been so much destroyed by guilt, as you said they have been, then how do they manage to live at all? I also wonder. It is a great mystery, a riddle. How they manage to live at all. Their sources of life are poisoned. In fact, they are not living. They are only managing to live. Managing to live is not living. Managing to live is just somehow dragging, pretending. It is pseudo, phony. All your life sources have been poisoned. And unless you get rid of the priest and the politician, you will never be able really to live. At the most you can manage. But by managing, you can only postpone death. You cannot really live. You can go on postponing death one day more. But this is not life. Life needs passion. Life needs intensity. Life needs fires. Because only when fire is there and flame is there, you bloom. Otherwise, you are just lukewarm, so-so. What is your love? How can you love? For 5,000 years, love has been condemned. So much so, that even if you think that you are no more part of any church, that you don't go to the priest, it doesn't matter much. The poisoning has gone so deep in the blood and the bones and the marrow that even if you don't go to the church, church continues in you. Deep down, it goes on pulling you, controlling you. Still you manage. Still one has to love and one has to live. So one lives and one loves. But love creates only agony, not ecstasy. And each agony proves that the priest is right. And the priest is the cause of the agony. That is the beauty of the whole thing. But each time you feel the agony of it, you are reminded again that the priest was right. That love is misery. Love is not misery. Love is sheer joy. But it has been contaminated, polluted. So many things have been forced into it that it is no more love, it is something else. Each time you feel frustration, the priest stints proved that he was right. I was wrong. I should have listened. I should have been wiser. Each love relationship proves the priest. Because no love relationship is love relationship at all. It is possessiveness, it is jealousy, it is domination, it is anger, it is violence, it is hatred. The very idea that you possess a person is the ugliest that you can invent. The psychological monopoly destroys our love. And when love is destroyed, naturally you feel in agony because the ecstasy is missing. And you invested so much for the ecstasy and the ecstasy is not there. And you are left crushed in a collapse. Deep down, the priest speaks, listen, I have been telling you. Had not I told you before? That love is illusory. That love is misery. That love brings anguish. Be alert in future. Escape. The priest has made you so much against life. He could not destroy life completely, that is true. He cannot. It is like a tree. But you have poisoned the roots. He could not destroy life. Life is irrepressible. Life is divine. Life is God. The priest was impotent to kill it completely. But at least he succeeded in poisoning it. I have heard, at a mountain resort, a man who was on vacation without his wife, and a woman who was on vacation without her husband, met at table. After a few days of pleasant conversation, they both grew fond of each other and eventually found themselves in bed together. But they felt very guilty and conscience-stricken. My wife, said the errant husband, works and slaves to make a nice home for my children. And he burst into tears. My husband is so good to me, said the cheating wife. He is working his fingers to the bone to send me on vacation. And I wind up in bed with a lover. And then she burst into tears too. This kept on for 5 days. So what happened? They spent the whole week long making love and crying and making love. This is what is happening all over the world. You cannot go totally into anything. you cannot escape either totally. You are hanging in the middle. You don't belong to this side and you don't belong to that side. You cannot escape from love, because when you escape from love, you feel utterly lonely. And there is misery. That misery is brought by nature. Because nature intends you to relate. Nature intends you to fall in tune with the total. And to fall in tune with the total, you have to start with individuals. Individuals are the doors for the total. So if you escape to the Himalayan caves, or to a Catholic monastery, nature will take revenge. Nature will never forgive you. You will be lonely, sad. Your life will be a kind of vegetation. You will vegetate. Your prayers will also be dull, because without a loving heart, how prayers can be alive? Your reading of the Bible or the Diamond Sutra will not have any flame, because when love dies, all flame dies. You will be just dragging, dull, dead. You will somehow live, waiting for death. Death will be your delivery. Life will be a constant burden. Nature will take revenge, and nature will tell you, go to life back. Relate with people. Life is in relationship, and joy is in relationship. Go and love. Prayer arises out of love. Merged in love, one comes to experience meditation for the first time. Go into life. Life will go on goading you. Life cannot leave you so easily. It never leaves. It has never left anybody. So you will be miserable. Your only joy will be one, that you are going to paradise and heaven, and there you will enjoy all things. And all these worldly people, these are going to hell and they will be burnt. Your only joy will be this fantasy, that everybody else who is enjoying in the world is going to hell. You can have a vicarious enjoyment. It is a kind of sadism. You want the whole world to go to hell. Just because you are suffering, you would like everybody to suffer. You are angry. Deep down, you are envious and jealous. You cannot forgive these people who are dancing in the streets, who are making love, who are living, who are singing songs. Those songs go on floating in the monastery. You have to take revenge. The hell is created by the monks just as a kind of revenge. The hell exists not. It is a pure invention of those who have left life and cannot enjoy their seclusion. And for themselves, they have created a heaven. In the heaven, they will enjoy all the things that they have left here. All the things. In the Mohammedan paradise, wine flows in rivers. Here, they have left the wine. In the paradise, they will be rewarded thousandfold, millionfold. In heaven, there are beautiful women who never go beyond 18. They are stuck there. Their growth stops. 18 is the only age. And their beauty is not the ordinary beauty of this world. Not muddy. They don't smell of sweet. They are fragrant. They have bodies of gold. These are fantasies. These people have missed women here. Now they are fantasizing. They are somehow consoling themselves that just wait a little more. Death will come and you will be delivered and God is going to repay you infinitely. They have done great job because they have left the life. And life is persistent inside them. That life is creating fantasies. When you fast, your hunger creates fantasies of eating. When you become a celibate, forced celibate, your hunger for the warmth of a woman or a man's body creates fantasies. If you escape, life will not forgive you, nature will not forgive you, God will not forgive you. You have gone against God, because this life is God's. If you go against life, you go against its creator. If you don't escape, and you don't listen to the priest, and you go against the priest will never forgive you. So whenever you are with a woman, the priest is there inside, destroying the joy of it. He is creating your so-called conscience, morality, puritanism. He is condemning you there, and you start self-condemning. And because you can't go deep into love, this priest is pulling you back. Love becomes agony. Rather than becoming an ecstasy, it turns into an agony. Then the priest is proved right. And you start thinking how to go to a monastery, how to leave all this love. The priest cannot forgive you if you are alive. And if you become dead in a monastery, the life cannot forgive you. You are in this dilemma. Listen to life and not to the priest. Priest has been in the service of the devil. He is Satan's disciple. Listen to life. Go deep in life. If love brings misery, then find out. It cannot be love. Something else is pretending to be love. Something else masquerading as love. Analyze it and drop all that is not love from love. And slowly, slowly you will start moving towards prayer and meditation. The last question. Why am I so much fascinated with pornography? Must be your religious upbringing. Sunday school. Otherwise, there is no need to be interested in pornography. When you are against the real, you start imagining. The day religious upbringing will disappear from the earth, pornography will die. It cannot die before it. This looks very paradoxical. magazines like Playboy, exists only with the support of the Vatican. Without the Pope, there will be no Playboy magazine. It cannot exist. It will not have any reason to exist. The priest is behind it. Why you should be interested in pornography when alive people are here? And it is so beautiful to look at alive people. You don't become interested in the picture of a naked tree, are you? Because all trees are naked. Just do one thing, cover all the trees. And sooner or later, you will find magazines circulating underground. Naked trees. And people will be reading them, putting inside their Bibles and looking at them and enjoying. Try it and you will see. Pornography can disappear only when people accept their nudity naturally. You don't want to see cats and dogs and lions and tigers in naked pictures. They are naked. In fact, when a dog passes you, you don't even recognize the fact. You don't take the note of it that he is naked. There are a few ladies in England, I have heard, who cover their dogs with clothes. They are afraid the nudity of the dog. May disturb some religious, spiritual soul. I have heard Bertrand Russell has written in his autobiography that in his childhood days, those were the days, Victorian days, even the legs of the chairs were covered because they are legs. Let man be natural and pornography disappears. Let people be nude. Not that they have to sit nude in their office. There is no need to go that far. But on the beaches, on the rivers, or when they are at ease relaxing in their home, resting under the sun in their garden, they should be nude. Let children play around nude, around nude mother and father. Pornography will disappear. Who will look at the Playboy magazine? For what? Something is being deprived. Some natural curiosity is being deprived. Hence, pornography. You ask, why am I so much fascinated with pornography? You will be surprised to know that the word fascinated comes from the word phallus. Man has been pathologically fascinated with phallus. For no reason. The only reason is that people have been hiding it. Even if you go to a nude primitive community, the whole body is nude, but the sexual organ they will hide. So at least that much pornography will continue. Why this fear? How it came? It must have somewhere a deep root cause in the past, maybe lost to human consciousness, but it is there. The word phallus in its turn comes from a Sanskrit root phala. Phala means the fruit. Reaching to the roots of this word, fascination, is very paying. First it comes from phallus, and phallus comes from phala. Phala means fruit, bearing fruit. Man became aware that the sexual organ is the most important organ because it gives birth to life. Became aware that somehow life must be residing in it. It is precious. Hide it. It is a treasure. Don't let anybody see it. Somebody may take your treasure. Somebody may steal it. Somebody may harm it. This idea got deep into the unconsciousness of man. There is no reality behind it. There is no reason. Pornography is a byproduct. And the priest became aware of one thing. And it was obvious that people fall in love and they forget the whole thing, the whole world. Falling in love or making love, they simply disappear from this world. They move into another dimension. And that dimension is the priest's dimension. He wants monopoly over it. He does not want any other way to approach God. He wants to come through the right way that he provides, the prayer, the meditation, this and that. And he became aware that people have a natural key with them. A natural door opens into the divine. That has to be stopped. Otherwise, who will be interested in their prayer and in their meditations? Who will be interested in churches and temples? First, people's natural capacity to enter into God has to be stopped and destroyed. Then the profession can flourish. That's how it has happened. Get rid of the priest within you. Say goodbye. And then suddenly you will see the pornography has disappeared. Kill the priest in your unconscious. And you will see a great change happening in your being. You will be more together. A small, beautiful story for you to meditate. Three priests went to Grand Central Station to get a train to Buffalo. The elder two appointed the youngest one to go to the counter to buy three tickets. Behind the wicket stood a gorgeously buxom young lady wearing a dress of outrageous décolleté. The young priest was visibly flustered. Finally he blurted out, "Please let me have three tickets for Pittsburgh." When he realized what he has said, he was mortified and ran back to the other two priests. The second took the money and approached the window. Here he too encountered the same upset, but managed to say, "Can I have three tickets for Pittsburgh?" And then laying down a $50 bill, he continued, "And I would like my change in nipples and dimes." Realizing what he has said, he was so abased, he left the tickets on the counter and ran back to the other two priests. The third, the eldest, then strode up to the counter to ask for the tickets and the change. Regarding at length the female clerk dressed in such a revealing fashion, he considered it his duty to admonish her. "Young lady," he said, "you know,
If you go around dressed in such a provocative manner, you will most certainly obtain your just deserts in the life to come. It is my bounden duty to tell you that when you pass to the great beyond, Saint Finger will certainly be there pointing his Peter at you. Enough for today.